You're listening to the Eddie Out Podcast. Current conversations with our community and their connections to the river. Hosted by Natalie Zollinger. Welcome. What's up, everyone? How's it going? Hope you're doing well. Thanks for tuning back into another episode here of the podcast. My guest today is Kate Aitchison. You know, describing Kate is like describing a desert flower. She is the sum of all of her color and beauty and is a woman of many talents. For starters, Kate is an amazing boatwoman and Grand Canyon River guide. She's an artist, designer, and owner of Terra Flags, and a professor at RISD, Rhode Island School of Design. I wanted to get Kate on the podcast to talk about her story, and the story behind her as an artist and boatwoman. In this episode, we talk about Kate's childhood, how she found the river, her path towards melding art, conservation, and the watershed, and what the future holds for both her and her career. I fucking love this conversation, and know you will too. And without further ado, Kate Aitchison. All right, welcome back, everyone. Today we have the pleasure to Eddie Out with Kate Aitchison. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
I'm stoked to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're sitting at my house right now. We're under an apricot tree, and I just made her a yummy latte with macadamia milk. And we've got our dog OC here, and so you might hear OC in the background. But yeah, Kate and I, we just met. I've heard about you for a long time, and you and I just did a Grand Canyon trip together, and it was so fun, so much fucking fun. And your cousin was on the trip, and I got to know you a little bit through him, and just like I've heard about you for a long time, and I'm just really excited to have you here and on the show.
So glad to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And for those that don't know you or haven't heard of you or haven't seen your prayer flags in some river house in the Southwest, do you mind talking a little bit about, you know, your childhood, like what it was like growing up, where you grew up, and how you found the river?
Yeah. So I'm originally from Flagstaff, Arizona, and I grew up with a family that was very outdoor oriented, but not just on the river. So I spent a lot of my childhood outside.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that really got me going on the river specifically was a program called Grand Canyon Youth. And when I was 15, Grand Canyon Youth was also just brand new, and they did like one or two trips a year, and I got to go on an upper half Grand Canyon trip with I think 10 other high schoolers and then 5 guides. And that trip really sort of, it really just opened me up to the possibilities of the river, and I just like really didn't know. And so ever since that trip, I've been kind of obsessed.
Yeah.
And so I did a few more Grand Canyon Youth trips as a youth, and then I started working for them in college, and I really grew with them as they grew, because they do a lot of trips now, like over 100 trips a year, I think. But when I was working for them, it was very sort of homegrown, and sort of they were still figuring it out. And so it was a really fun place to learn how to row, to learn how to guide, and really become a boatman as I grew up. So it's and I still do trips for them occasionally, which is really awesome.
Yeah, I heard a lot about GCY because we had another guide on the trip who had also done the apprentice program.
Yeah, that's a fairly new program for them because I don't think they really realized how many youth were going to want to continue to work with GCY and become guides. And so that was sort of their answer to that, and I was a little bit before that program actually came about, but I think now, like, the majority of the guides that work for GCY are alumni.
That is pretty cool.
Pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, and GCY, I mean, I've heard about it since, so the founder is Emma, right?
The founder's actually Carol Fritzinger.
Oh, okay.
She goes by Fritz, and she ran the logistics for USGS for a long time in Flagstaff, and she got that program going, and then Emma was the first director of GCY and is still the director now.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, it's really her, it is her program now, but Fritz sort of got it got it running because she wanted kids to get on the river. And it's sort of been a dream of hers for a long time. So.
Oh, that's so special.
That's and another Emma, person you should interview.
Yeah, Fritz?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put that down. And Emma's husband is Dennis Smolten. He was he worked at Oars, and he was kind of like a pseudo manager. And he was like, you know, up at the top of the chain when I came on board with Oars. And Dennis was an amazing human. Mm-hmm. And I always heard about GCY, but never really made my way down to Flag and learned about the program until really like this trip. I was like, wow, I should just start doing some trips there. Like, it just sounds like a cool thing. And I just told my sister about it for her son, and she's going to look into it, like that middle school trip. I heard that's like a really fun trip.
Yep.
And so it's just really cool to get kids. And then like what they learn there, they can bring over to like when their family does private trips, or, you mm-hmm. know, they can bring all the things that they teach and empower them to like teach their family or their friends or whatnot. It's a pretty cool program.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I think the other thing that's cool about them is, as far as I can tell, they're one of the only river specific youth programs out there. There's a lot of outdoor programs for youth that are more focused on backpacking and or have a variety of focuses, but as far as I can tell, Grand Canyon Youth is maybe the only one that's all river focused.
Mm.
And so that's pretty special.
Yeah.
I think, because it's a really different experience, and I think it's a really accessible experience for a lot of kids, even if they've never been camping or hiking before. Because it's there, you can just bring a little bit more stuff. You can, it's like a little bit, I don't know, it's just like a little,
like, well, it's
easier.
Like glorified car camping in a way, right? Yeah. Like, you can bring your pillow.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, I'm just going to, like, do all the things that I can actually bring my pillow and not feel bad.
Yeah.
Or not have to worry. But, yeah, GCY, I will make sure I put that in the show notes, so Grand Canyon Youth, and all the links to get your kids in or work for them or maybe, like, support them.
Yeah.
Contribute. And you're on the dogs.
Hey, Elsie.
Oh, there's another. So our other roommate has a dog that just woke up and Meadow Sea. So they're going to be hanging out in the background a little bit. But we're doing a little interview here. Oh, you're fine. No, we knew that was going to be Dogland. For those that are listening that have dogs, they totally understand, I'm sure, the fun that it takes to have an animal. Oh, see. There we go.
Yeah,
there we go. but you are also, I mean, with GCY, I was told that you're on the alumni or the alumni committee.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about that and how you got involved with that?
The Alumni Fund Committee is a committee of alumni, and we started it in like 2014 or 15, and it was me and my friend Sarah Bugner and my other friend Wade Permar, who are all alumni also, and we just decided that, well, I had seen this in other contexts that, like, there were alumni committees that were like raising money to help sort of give back and try to help other people have the same experiences that we had gotten to have as youth. And so, you know, like, we figured if we could get a group of alumni to give $5 or $10 each, and we could get enough people to do that, then we could support a scholarship for a student to come on the river. And so that's sort of where it started. And the first year we were able to raise over $2,000.
Whoa.
Just in small donations.
Dang.
We had one big donation and everybody else just gave like what they could. And we started to tell kids on the trip, like, you know, you could buy an ice cream after the trip, or you could give us the money that you were going to buy your ice cream with, and then we could give it to some other kid to go on the river. And it sort of started to work. And then a couple years into it, we started making sun hoodies as a fundraiser, just to sort of have something that was a little more concrete, so that we weren't spending so much time just asking for money, because that was a lot of effort. And a lot of us, too, were, like, transitioning into other roles elsewhere, and so we weren't on the river as much and couldn't interact directly as much as we were.
Mm-hmm.
And those sun hoodies have, like, sold out almost every year and have allowed us to keep doing... we do a scholarship for a Grand Canyon position each year. Or if there's someone else in a different program in need, we sort of defer to the office and they help us make the decision for where the money should go.
That's so cool.
And so the hoodies themselves are cool because they're all youth art.
Mm-hmm.
And so every year we choose a youth and then we pay them to use their artwork. And then that's the design for the year.
Yeah.
And so...
And are they mostly doing it on the water or are they going back home?
Mostly, yeah, it has been because I've been on the river and I've been able to like facilitate an afternoon where we're just making block prints and mm-hmm. then we collect a copy of them and then choose one at the end of the season. This year, because of COVID and it's just kind of a weird year, we're actually in the process of setting up a Google form so that anybody can apply and... or just upload their images, and it could be any, it can really be anything they want to do. It doesn't have to be a block print. It could be a drawing or...
Oh, cool. Okay.
Whatever they want, and then hopefully by the end of this summer, we'll have a bunch to choose from, and we'll pick one, and we'll do a hoodie for next year. We're sort of taking this year off just because of COVID, and we had leftovers from last year, but they're really fun, and all the money just goes right back into the fund.
That's awesome. And yeah, you were wrapping some old ones. So I was like, oh, I want that one. How do I get that one?
Yeah.
I mean, on the river, like sun hoodies are becoming super popular just for the sake of like not having to wear sunscreen all the time and like being able to put the sun hoodie over your hat and really shade your face and it keeps you cool and you can keep it wet. And it's like a little swamp cooler, like swamping cooler effect. And then they're fun to wear. And now guides have like many sun hoodies.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you're intrigued, I'll have a website in the show notes to be able to purchase if there's any left.
There are, there are ones left and they've finally put them up online. So
okay.
You can order them from Grand Canyon Youth.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. And, you know, that, like, talking about art and block prints, I mean, art mm-hmm. is a big thing in your life as well. And I remember I got yours, the Terra Flags, not the Grand Canyon one, but the other, the Bear's Ears. Mm-hmm. I think I got those ones first. And I was just like, who's this? I didn't quite realize, like, oh, this is like a river person. And I remember Polly, my brother-in-law, he was like, oh, yeah, no, she's like a legit artist. And so, I just love to hear about, like, you know, where your passion for art came from and how it got funneled to what you do now.
Yeah. Well, my mom was a middle school art teacher.
Really? Me too.
Really?
Well, she was an elementary school art teacher.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
So that's sort of, I think, where it came from originally. There was just always art happening at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And in college, I sort of tried not to be an art major because I thought it wasn't going to be useful, whatever that means, but ended up majoring in art anyways because it was the only thing that I wanted to spend all my time doing. And it was like I liked learning stuff, but I didn't want to write papers. But for art, I would spend hours completing everything. And so once I finished college, I really started guiding full-time and was trying to figure out, like, what I wanted to do next and decided to get my MFA in printmaking. And I was really interested in, like, figuring out how to combine my love of the outdoors and of rivers and of, like, watersheds with my art practice, and I wasn't totally sure how I wanted to do that. And I ended up doing some collaborations with some conservationists in Flagstaff who were doing fire science, so it was like a little bit different, but I just was like trying to figure out how to combine everything. And I really think I still am doing that. It's like I think that's going to be like a lifelong process.
Mm-hmm.
But after that collaboration, we had a show. And I decided to apply to grad school, and I ended up getting into the Rhode Island School of Design, and I was just, like, totally shocked because that was sort of my reach school. Like, I don't think this is going to happen, but I'll just try and see what happens. And I got in. And so I felt like I should go. So I went and It was crazy. I felt like I moved to a different country.
In Rhode Island?
Yeah.
Really? In what way?
The culture is just, it's just a different culture. Uh-huh. And it's a really different way of interacting.
Come on. Get the ball.
She's like, those are balls. Those are bocce balls. But I had an amazing grad advisor, and just like I was with all of these amazing artists who were doing really different things than I was doing, and I just had 2 years to just make art, and it was the first time I'd ever had just that time, and it was really amazing. And I got to like, and I think also looking back on it, having that separation from this place really helped me focus on this place and figure out like what it was about the Southwest and the watersheds and the water and the rivers and the deserts that I was really interested in. And so I was able to make a lot of work about this place without being here. And that might seem weird, but I think it actually helped me clarify some of the things that I cared about this place that I didn't really realize before I left, and I wouldn't have realized if I hadn't left.
You got a different perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you didn't have the stressors or the day-to-day, you know, things coming up to block that or to, like, affect your heart and your relationship to it.
Yeah, so I did. My thesis project was a huge print of a dam. It was, like, 8 feet tall and 12 feet wide. It was a series of panels. Mm. And
Which dam?
It was sort of a made-up dam. Oh, okay. It was like kind of Glen Canyon Dam, but not really. Uh-huh. And I ended up doing a whole series of prints based off of the Central Arizona Project and all an imagery that was inspired by our manipulation of water.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of that and sort of thinking about guiding and boating, and I've known Brad Demick for a long time because he's friends with my dad, and I grew up in Flagstaff, so I just, like, knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, like, one day I, like, woke up, and I was like, I wonder if anyone's ever carved a dory. And I'm not totally sure where that came from, that thought, but I was, like, doing block printing and all kinds of printing, and I think it was just sort of, like, marinating in the back of my head. And so I wrote him an email, and I was like, do you think this is possible? Like, could you make a dory that's also a block print? And he was like, I have no idea. And let me send you some scraps. So he sent me scrap wood. And I tried carving on it, and it worked. But and then sort of like a year went by, and it was still sort of in the back of my mind. And then I found this residency at the Santa Fe Art Institute.
Uh-huh.
And they do themed residencies each year. And the year after I graduated from grad school, the theme was water rights.
Oh, my God.
And so I applied. That sort of inspired me to apply to make this boat. And so I wrote this proposal, like, I want to make a boat that is also a print. And I was accepted into that residency. And so that sort of, like, pushed me to actually do the project rather than just have it sitting in my mind.
Mm-hmm. I just got the chills. Wow. It was like a beautiful orchestra or symphony of all the things, like interests plus like curiosity plus like connections.
Yeah.
And then timing.
Yeah. And Brad was really on board with it, you know, because he's busy and he makes boats all the time and he makes a ton of boats, but he was willing to like try this crazy project with me. And so...
When was this?
It was January and February of 2017.
Of 2017, cool.
And so right before I went to Santa Fe, I went to Brad's boat shop, and we had talked and decided that a drift boat was the best boat to build, because I'm not a boat builder, and mm-hmm. it's like the simplest form, because it's not decked, it's not... It doesn't have fiberglass. It's just like a pretty overall simple boat to build.
Uh-huh.
He's like, this is the best beginner boat. Like, you should start with this boat. And so we made the hull, pieces. So we scarfed the two sheets of plywood together to get a 16-foot long sheet of plywood. And then out of that...
Ozzie, come here. Come on.
Out of that, you can get each side of the boat. So that's a cool part of that design, too. You don't need, like, extra bits.
Yeah.
Like you do for dories. They're just a little bit bigger, so you need more wood.
Okay.
So we made the two hull pieces. So there's, like, two flat, long, 16-foot long shapes. And then I put them on top of my car and drove them to Santa Fe, which was insane because it was just, like, whoa, 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 the whole time. Because that's, I mean, my car's not 16 feet long, so.
Yeah.
And then I spent the next 2 months like planning and carving that boat, and that's all I did.
But I mean, that was like your residency, right?
Yeah.
For like a, what would that be like? Not a master's, because you just
I had just finished my master, so it's just a place where people come and make art for a certain amount of time.
Okay, and you get funded for it if you have a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And so. Because it's a drift boat and because it's not decked, I didn't want to make it a Grand Canyon-focused boat because it's not really a boat that can go there, at least now. I would like to deck it out at some point. But because it was, like, the beginner boat and, like, I was thinking about my own beginnings and where I learned to row, which was on the San Juan... And it was also when Bears Ears was being rescinded and there was all this, like, horrible energy around that. I decided to make all the imagery on the boat of that area.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
So it's all, like, the San Juan watershed.
Okay.
And so the bow of the boat are the San Juan Mountains. And then as you go down each side, it's, like, different parts along the river. And I was I wanted to, like, acknowledge that there were parts of the river that were also manipulated by humans. It's so it's not all natural landscape. There's the Navajo reservoirs on there, like agriculture from shiprock. There's the Halchita uranium cap is on there because there's tons of uranium right along the San Juan. And so it's, like, all these different parts of that river, which is... It's all connected. It's all part of this larger watershed that I sort of grew up on and intrigued by.
Yeah. That's really cool. Like, you almost, like, gave the river, like, a voice and, like, you painted a picture of what that river has to deal with. You know, it's not able to tell us, and you put it all together. What a cool thing, you know, to also bring awareness as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's my hope. And all, and it's still.
Oh, see, hey, Ozzie, come on,
come here. She's so crazy.
She's just waiting for you to talk about her. Speaking of bluff and.
She's a San Juan River dog.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah, no worries. Oh, see, maybe grab one of those bocce balls too. Oh, see.
yeah. So. That residency, I carved it, and then the very last week, Brian came and helped me print it all. So I had, like, I made so many prints off of it before it was turned into a boat. So
like each part of it was almost like a line of cut or a block print.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So cool. I have a print of each hull. So I have, like, really long print of each side, and then a lot of smaller prints.
Okay.
Which I still have, and I'm still figuring out exactly what I'm going to do with. But I just printed as much as I could. And then I left the ink on the boat. So it's sort of like different colors. And then I think that summer I finished all the other parts of the boat. So it's sort of in sections. So the hull was done. Then I finished all the ribs and, like, the transom. And then that fall...
Ozzie, come here. Come on.
That fall is when we assembled it.
Okay.
And we assembled it at Brad's shop.
Okay.
And
how long did it take you to do the first kind of phase?
It took us 12 hours to assemble it.
We did shit.
It, We did it all in one day, like most of the assembly,
yeah.
Which was, there was five of us, because Brad had a few people in and out of the shop that day, and we started at noon, and we weren't sure how far we were going to get. We're like, we've got a day, so let's see how far we can get. So the first thing you do is you attach the two pieces of the hull to the bow post, and then you bend them and attach them to the ribs as you go.
Uh-huh.
And so we got all that done. And there's actually some stop motion or time-lapse videos of this.
Really? Where?
Brad, I think I have them on my website under my blog, like the blog post section. And then I think Brad also has them on his website under a similar blog post that he made about it.
Okay, cool.
And so there's a time-lapse of that. And then by that time it was like 3 or 4 and we decided to put the floor on. And then it was like 5 or 6. And it was at that point, it was either like we were going to stop or we were just going to go. And I think we were all a little delirious and crazy. And we were like, let's just do it. Let's
all forward.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so we finished it at midnight and then we proceeded to all sit in it until like 3 in the morning and just drink champagne and like look at it and be like, wow.
And yeah, like that's such a cool thing for like it to be just this crazy idea that you woke up with. And then to have a relationship or like a connection to Brad. And for those that have kind of listened to all the episodes, I did interview Brad. He's like episode 4 or 5. So make sure and check that out and listen to his story. And I'll put the link in the show notes to that episode. But I mean, as far as like, once you completed that, were you able to take it back and show it and like have a closure with that residency? Or,
you know, I haven't been back to show them.
Really?
I really want to
go.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah. Well, because then it was like, okay, so then we had this boat. Then we had to get a trailer for this boat. So it's been a process. And now it has a trailer. It has everything. But we did take it in December. So I think that was like October maybe that we finished it. And then in December, we took it on the river with Brad.
Oh. So down the San Juan? Just on, okay.
Yeah. So,
oh, wow.
Brian and I and Brad
okay.
on the river together in December. It was so cold. But it was awesome to just, like, put it in the water.
Did you do an upper or a full?
We did an upper.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And that was pretty special. And now it's been on San Juan several times, and then it went on the green through Deso Gray, and then we did that trip down the San Juan arm of Lake Powell and up through...
That's right.
Up to Halls on the Colorado arm.
Mm-hmm.
I would really like to take it back to the residency at some point.
Yeah. Just to show it. But, and you named it, right?
Yeah, it's named the Katie Lee. And it took a while to name it because I wasn't sure. But it was like right around the time that it was finished that she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like the right name for it because she was such an advocate for that place. And maybe not specifically the San Juan, but just like dams and rivers.
Yeah.
And her legacy is really amazing to me personally. And so it just seemed like there wasn't any other name that the boat could be.
Yeah, well, and like for your name to be Kate, you know, that's kind of special too, that
yeah.
it can be along that same line. And I'll put a link to just Katie Lee and her, like who she is and what she's all about. And she also sang, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put some songs in there that
yeah, she's got
she was
songs.
Awesome. I didn't get ever really meet her or like see her in person, but she seemed like a really amazing human for sure. And
yeah,
so,
I actually got to meet her once, which was another reason that I think I wanted to name it that.
Yeah.
Because I taught this program for 2 semesters called Grand Canyon Semester.
Uh-huh.
And they do it at Northern Arizona University and at Prescott College. So I taught 1 semester at each place.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my students at NEU, that was like her final project was about Katie Lee. So she wanted to interview her. And so Katie Lee agreed to that. So I just went and just listened to the interview, which was amazing.
Do you think we could get that and put it in the show notes, that interview?
Maybe, yeah, I could ask her, yeah.
Okay, that'd be rad. People be able to, like, just hear her, and she's got a great voice.
Yeah.
And So, like, starting to connect, so, you know, your love of the river, and you spent a lot of time in Bluff. That's where you live now, mm-hmm. right? You just bought a house there. And connections to, you know, school. And, like, where did block printing come in, and why did you connect to that, like, line of cut or block printing specifically?
Yeah, I think block printing, I started doing it when I was guiding for GCY.
Oh, okay.
And it seemed like it was a fun way to bring art to the youth without, there's something less intimidating about block printing than there is about drawing. Because I think we have like a preconceived notion of what a drawing should look like. And if you can't make the drawing look like the thing, then people get really frustrated and flustered and feel like they can't do it. Mm-hmm. But with block printing, you're removed from that because you're like carving onto this piece of linoleum. And then you're printing it, and so it almost like doesn't matter what it is; it just turns out,
and it's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You like put ink on it. You're like, yeah. Wow, I just did that. Yeah,
yeah. And I figured out that if it's not that hard to do on the river, and so I started to I did it when I was guiding a lot for GCY. I did it on every trip with all the kids, and so that definitely made me better at it.
Yeah,
it also just. It still continues to be a part of my own practice because it's pretty portable too, because printmaking can be really cumbersome and need a lot of equipment and hard to, it's not like transportable, mm-hmm. but block printing is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you just need wood, ink.
And a little tool.
And a little tool.
Yeah.
And then paper if you want to like facilitate it.
Yeah.
Right. All the way through. And so is that what you teach? Because you're a professor at, remind me the school.
Rhode Island School of Design.
Rhode Island School of Design, which is a big deal. And, like, how did you get that job or that in and just...
It was kind of accidental, I think. I was still living in Providence in the winter, and I had made connections there in grad school, and they needed people to teach during COVID. They needed more people. Because they were making the classes smaller and changing the format of them. And so I just got a phone call. And I think it helped that I lived in Providence because a lot of people live in New York and commute. And commuting and teaching this past year it has been really difficult and kind of scary in terms of spreading things. And so... I think that's how it worked out.
What do you teach?
I teach foundations, which is freshman, and I teach design.
Okay.
But, like, the principles of design. So it's kind of a lot of different things.
Yeah, and how's that been? Like, what have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about, like, how has your art changed, if anything, once you started teaching?
I think one of the most amazing things about teaching... is just like watching the students grow and it's not like it's like they grow in these spurts and it's so cool to watch them figure that out for themselves. And to also, the other thing that I think about art that a lot of people think it's an innate talent, but I actually think that anybody can do it. And yes, there's like variety of talent in anything, right? In science, in art, in boating, whatever it might be. But just like watching them put in the work and do the practice and get better is really cool to see. And it just like reinforces my belief that like anybody can do it if they want to.
Yeah.
You just have to practice. Just like you have to practice an instrument or practice math equations. Rowing, exactly. All it takes. And so that's really cool.
Yeah. That's cool that, you know, that it's not like, oh, my mom was a teacher. And so I, you know, I have the gene, the art gene. It's like, no, like it just like with anything, you know, if you have desire and a passion for it, you'll be good at it and you'll find your own like niche with it. And you've kind of found line of cut or block printing as your niche and your business Terra Flags. Can you talk a little bit about like how that came to be and why you decided to make them as prayer flags and what that.
Yeah, I think that came out of teaching people to block print on the river mm-hmm. and trying different materials, like printing on fabric, and just seeing what that was like. And then starting to, I don't actually even know how I came up with the idea for the flags, but it just like happened. And then there were flags, and they started to be like, people wanted them. And so I just kept making more and more and more. And I like them too. Like, I like the idea of them as prayer flags for the earth. And so that's why I named it Terra Flags. Cause they're not prayer flags, like in the traditional sense, cause they have images on them, but I like that they're ephemeral and they sort of fade and they disintegrate over time. But they're also just like an acknowledgement of these places that are really special that we need to take care of, even if we're not there all the time.
Yeah. You've really melded the two, which is really cool. Just like awareness with a product, that always helps, right? A really cool product. And I mean, especially with the Bears Ears one, I thought that was a really cool meld of the two. And how many different styles do you have or art?
Right now,
faces,
I guess. Grand Canyon flags and two types of Bears Ears flags. And then I've got a couple of flags that I just make for certain people to sell at their store. So there's like I have a Zion flag, but it's sold at a store in Zion. I don't sell them online.
Okay.
And then there's one that I have that's redwood trees that is the same. It's for this person in Boonville, California.
Okay. So I'll make sure and put the links for, can people buy them online or do you have to go to their store?
I think you have to go to their store, but I'm not sure because things have changed a lot this year with online stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. And then the Grand Canyon one is the Nankoweap Overlook, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so beautiful. Yeah. It's like classic Grand Canyon.
Yeah. And that's one of my first block prints that
really?
I did down there. So.
Oh, sure.
I like having that one.
Oh, so wait, how old were you when you did that?
That was, I think I made that one on my first baggage boat through Grand Canyon. So
no
I was probably
way.
Like 23.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was probably Delaney's age.
Yeah. Delaney. She was just on our trip. She was a baggage boatman, and she also came from GCY. And it was really cute to see all of you all just take her under your wing. And you're like, we've been where you are. Like, you got this.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool. We had a lot of really strong women, like, helping her see what it could be like if she wanted to make guiding a career. And that was really special because I didn't get that. And you probably did or didn't.
I mean, sort of, but not like that trip was.
Yeah, that was special.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was even like, oh my gosh.
I know.
Crushing on everybody. But yeah, the prayer flags are beautiful. And I'll definitely leave put a link in the show notes for them. It's terraflags.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you can also get to that website from our website.
Okay. And what's your website?
It's just kateacheson.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And I mean, as far as like, you know, your relationship to the water and art and block printing and giving back and also guiding and nurturing your soul and teaching, and you've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
And then you've got OC.
She's like,
but you're definitely not doing it alone. And you just recently got married a couple years ago, and you talked a little bit about Brian as far as helping you with the boat. But how did you guys meet? And what do you want the world to know about Brian?
We met in Providence, and
okay.
he was a
buddy.
Miros.
Oh, see, come on. Come on.
He is the print shop manager of a community art space.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. There.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
OC, come on.
Where's your other ball? Come here.
Two balls at all times. And they had some equipment that RISD had donated to them because they didn't have enough space for it. And so the like arrangement was that RISD students could come and use that equipment, but so could the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was using that for my thesis. And so that's when we met. And then, I don't think he had any idea what boating was or anything like that. 'Cause he's from New England. And so after, I graduated, I took him as an assistant.
Oh, cool. Okay.
On with Polly.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay.
For
CanX. Yeah, CanX, the company we both work for.
Yep. And I think he was very intrigued. Well, obviously he was intrigued because now he's rowing.
Right. He's a river guide. He works his way up.
Yeah, he's rowing people for the first time.
Oh, shit.
Just right now.
Wow, what an interesting, sideswipe into his, he had no idea that was going to happen, you know? And you came in and shocked his world.
Yeah. So he's definitely fallen in love with the Southwest, which I don't think he would have ever, if we hadn't met.
Yeah. Kind of changed his life.
Yeah. But also he's an artist, so it's cool to have that connection too.
That's cool. And you guys have a printmaking shop
studio.
Okay.
And it has a lot of equipment and we can silk screen and do, I have an etching press and also a Hollander beater, which is what you use to make paper pulp with.
Okay. Oh, paper pulp. Yeah. This was kind of the coolest thing I've heard of in linking, again, your passions with, sustainability and issues, on the, along the watershed. Do you want to talk a little bit about the paper?
Yeah, so, I don't know, I feel like I'm always in these loops of, connecting the place to the art, to the place to the art in different ways, and mm-hmm. so one of those other loops is through making paper. And so I started making paper in grad school, and that's really when I was introduced to it. And the thing that I think is really cool about paper is you're making it out of natural materials.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're using things that are grown in the earth. And so having been a guide and done a lot of science with GCY and done a lot of invasive species removal and just even just knowing about those projects going on the river.
Mm-hmm.
I started thinking about if you're making paper out of plants, why can't you make paper out of plants that you don't want anyways?
Yeah.
And so I started to just experiment with that, and it's become a really main part of my art practice now, is making paper out of invasive plants from all over, wherever I am, and trying to learn about what the invasives are, why they're invasive, and using them. And also, the other thing I've been experimenting with is yard waste.
Oh, cool.
And garden waste.
Oh my God.
So I've made a lot of paper out of arugula and tomatoes.
No
like
way.
The actual plants.
Holy shit. But not the fruit, but the greens.
The greens.
Okay,
yeah.
Greens.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you have to have some kind of fibrous material to do it with. So I've also made paper out of tamarisk, out of Russian olive, out of arrowweed, willow.
Specifically just a tamarisk solution. So the paper is pure material and tamarisk versus other plants.
Yeah. And I've also mixed them all together because the thing is even if the plants themselves are maybe not quite strong enough or not doing exactly what you want them to do, there's plenty of other fiber out there that is strong enough. So you can mix them and you can get the quality and the color mm-hmm. of the tamarisk with the strength of a different fiber.
That is so fucking cool.
And then and then printing on top of that. So it's this layers of materiality. And really bringing the idea of the images of the place are important, but also the stuff that the images are made out of mm-hmm. are important.
Mm-hmm.
And, as we continue in this world and this consumer driven world, I just am always thinking about should I be buying more art supplies or should I be trying to figure out how to make my own or what is a way to create some kind of art practice that I feel good about making things and feel like I'm making them in a sustainable way. And so making paper has sort of become a part of my exploration of that.
Oh my God. That is so do you do it? Do you sell it or is it more just you print on it and then sell the print?
Right now, it's more I've been printing on it and selling the prints, but I do have, like, sort of a hope of making some paper just to sell as paper mm-hmm. in the future, because it's beautiful paper, and it's really different from commercially made paper, mm-hmm. and it's fun for people to, like, hold and touch and, like, learn. It's, like, a whole different way of, like, learning about place and learning about plants. So there's, like, this ecology connection that I really like.
Whoa.
To it.
I'm blown away. Like, right now, I'm just, like, I mean, that's an idea you could propose to a paper manufacturer. I mean, you mm-hmm. could, that could change, that could make waves.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And there is, like, a small group of artists who are all sort of focused on that.
Uh-huh.
And so that's pretty cool to just, like, watch them and see what they're making paper out of. And I really like the paper making community because it's really tiny.
Yeah, I'm like, there's a community?
There is. Yeah, it's really tiny, and everybody's really open to sharing knowledge because it's kind of a technical process. Like, you have to collect fiber, and then you have to cook it, and you have to pulp it, and then if you want your paper to last for a while, you have to make it pH neutral so that
right.
it doesn't just disintegrate over time. And so it requires, like, a... It is sort of scientific in a way, but then it's also very artistic
mm-hmm.
if you want it to be. So, and there's sort of that entire range of people working. There's scientists, like, working on it because they are sort of more interested in that aspect of it. And then there are artists who are interested in, like, these ideas of materiality and sustainability and working from that perspective. And so, I mean, my dream would be to do a river trip where we make paper on the river.
Oh, my God. Yes. I want to be on that trip.
Because you can make, once you have the pulp, you can make paper in the, it's a water intensive process. That's
okay.
The only thing that is kind of a bummer about it.
Uh-huh.
But you can just, like, pull water out of the river, put it in a vat, make paper because it's all natural fibers. It's all, there's no chemicals in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can put the water back in the river when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I love that idea of using the water that's already there and not really not taking it away, but just, like, using it for a minute and putting it right back
right.
in.
Yeah. Well, God, and then just what a cool thing to, like, have paper that you just dug up the tamarisk or, like, was okay to, right, by, like, maybe
yeah.
a science trip that they're like, okay, we're going to remove this tamarisk, we're going to make paper, we're going to use the river, and, like, and then to, like, have that and, like, see it and feel it and, like, use it, like, what a cool, empowering thing on many levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
You're
it's
making big,
cool.
big waves. So, like, I mean, you continue to talk about these loops as far as, like, thinking on the horizon line, you
yeah.
know, bringing the river terms back in, but, like, what's, like, the next, or what are you excited about as we move forward, 2021, 2022, melding? I just put it together, but RISD is the Rhode Island School.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I thought you worked for, because your cousin was like, oh, yeah, she's part of RISD. And I was like, and I just put the two together. Like, well, when are you going to talk about that one other school? I was like, oh, that is the school. Oh, my
yeah.
God, I'm just not an art person. But I know it's a big deal that you went to school there and that you that you also teach there, but what's on the horizon line for you as you think about melding all these loops or closing them or
yeah.
opening them and how they all connect?
There's a lot of things, but something that is really intriguing to me right now that I've started to do that I want to do more of is to try and put these sheets of paper and these prints back into the environment that they're about and see how the images interact with the environment itself. And so,
oh, see,
last year, on the CanX training trip for the first time, I brought a bunch of prints and I just, like, floated them in the river at different points and took videos of them to sort of see what happened. Like, are they going to sink? Are they going to fall apart? And it's so crazy what they do. They do all different kinds of things, but, like, having them float on the surface of the water. There's a couple videos on my website
okay.
of that. But I think I'm always, like, trying to mush things together. Like, how can I combine this with this? And so for a long time it's been, like, how can I combine my love of the river and the watershed and boating and all of that with art. And now it's like, how can I bring this art back into the river and the watershed and just sort of see how they interact with one another. And so, I don't know, I'm That's still it's still very experimental, but that's sort of where I'm at right now. And I'm hoping to do... I'm going to have a show in January, I think, in the winter at some point at the University of Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to incorporate that in some way into that show.
Mm, cool.
And also continue to make paper out of plants and sort of mix it all together and just sort of see what happens.
That's cool. And do you continue to plan on teaching at RISD and keeping that going? And
for now, yeah.
Okay, cool.
And also, I've also been teaching at Colorado College. So I like the teaching aspect, and I'm not sure where that exactly is headed. But it's nice to have the combination of the teaching and the guiding as a way to sort of... continue to find inspiration to do all of this other stuff too.
Yeah. Are there any like workshops on the horizon for someone listening that would want to, you know, maybe they're not connected to a school, but they'd want to take a course or a class or just learn from you?
Yeah, there aren't at the moment, but I do definitely teach workshops and I try to advertise them on my Instagram, which is probably like the most up-to-date stuff. So.
Okay. Cool.
I put a lot of artwork on there, but also try to like tell people what I'm doing and where. Mm. So,
cool.
Right now, it's a lot of teaching, and it's I think mostly just because of COVID, there hasn't been the opportunity to have workshops in person. And so now that it's things are starting to open up again, I think there will be that potential.
Cool.
Coming down the line.
Wow, Kate, you're such a badass. I'm so in awe of you and like what you've done and how you've affected and influenced not only the people but the environment and being a voice for the environment and the watershed and the land and the places that are endangered. And what a cool, like I can tell that you walk with your heart, you know, and you care about everyone. Like you'll take the time. If I ask you questions, you'll look me in the eye and you'll like be with me in that moment, you know, present moment. And it's just a really special thing to witness and be part of and also watch.
Oh, thanks.
And yeah, yeah, you're such an incredible human. And I'm so excited that we've become friends and I really hope to continue a friendship and support you. And I'd love to like get you back on to talk more about like what you're planning on doing and your connection to, you know, anything else you want to talk about or share, projects and like just ways of people supporting you. Cause at the very end of our trip, you like gave us all flags and you're like, I don't make money with these things. And I'm just like, oh, I want to support you. And so if you're listening, please buy the Terra flags, like write a little note and say you listened to this episode and just to really support. I have them. If you've ever done a Zoom call with me, I've got them in the back of my in the Zoom background. And it's just a really cool thing to have. And you don't necessarily have to be a river guide to have them. And just like connecting to the water, the landscape. And as far as like, you know, moving forward and things that you want people to know about you or places you want them to go to support you, anything you want the audience specifically to know about you, your path, and how to support you moving forward.
Well, probably the best way to, like, just keep updated on what I'm doing is my Instagram. I have a website, too, but I update it less frequently.
Okay.
And so Instagram is the best way to see what I'm doing. And probably get in touch with me, too, because
cool.
I check it pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And, just if you're interested in paper making or printmaking or workshops or whatever it might be, I'm happy to talk to anybody. So
cool. Yeah, so if someone wants to like hire you to come, you know, once COVID and like it's a little easier to be in person with people you don't know,
yeah.
Like professionally they can reach out,
yeah,
and find you.
Absolutely.
And this potential trip of like making paper on the river, like I want to be part of it. If there's anything that actually like manifests, I'll make sure and put that out there into the audience, because that's
great.
Really cool. And I'd love to be a guide or a baggage boatman or like an extra hand.
Let's make it happen.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think, you know, just starting to like say it out loud will make it manifest itself. And that's sort of how the boat started and became a thing. And it's how I bought my etching press. I just started telling people I wanted to buy a press, and then all of a sudden I got a press. So if I just start saying it out loud, I think
there you
it'll
go.
Happen.
The energy, well, you've done so much good. I feel like that energy will come back to you tenfold. And And well, I would love to keep chatting. I know that we both have things to do, but as far as like a closing question, I mean, the river's been a huge influence to you, and I'm sure you've learned a lot from it and have connected it with, you know, your private relationship, your professional relationships. But as far as like, what would you say is the biggest lesson that you've learned specifically from the river?
I think the thing that keeps coming back is the fact that just being present and in the moment, because you can't worry about what's coming next because there's nothing you can do about it until you get there. And for me, like, I am always trying to do that in my life. And so when I'm on the river and I sort of get forced back into that present moment, and that's really powerful.
Yeah.
And I love that feeling.
Yeah. And I would second that. Like, you are very present, and you're just an inspiration, and you're an incredible force, a silent force. That's why OC's got to speak up for you. You're a silent force, but it's been an honor to get to know you and do a trip with you and interview you. And I hope that others feel the love and respect that you have for the water and for, and you just the love you have in your voice. It's incredible. So I feel very special.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we get to do another trip together.
Me too. Yeah. We're going to be back on the water in August, and I'm really stoked. You're going to be rowing a dory.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do like a little catch up, you know, like 10 minutes, like, how's the dory? How's everything? Like, what have you learned? Yeah. And, but yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. And
thanks,
I'm so excited.
For having me.
Yeah. I'm stoked for all the things you're going to be creating and all the people that will come in and out of your life. And yeah, cheers to you and clean runs down the river.
Thank you.
Mwah.
Well, that's our show. Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation with Kate Aitchison.
If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, make sure and share this link with someone you think would benefit from it too. And a quick reminder to subscribe to Eddie Out on social, as well as giving us that 5-star rating and review. I'm very grateful for you taking the time to listen in with me today. And until next time, big hits, big fun, good health, and high water. Cheers.